Good evening, Juno, and thank you for tuning in to our third segment in this series. This is the interview with Black Millennials living in Juno. While this is a very personal and touching moment in time, we would like to inform you that the use of the N-word is mentioned at least 6 times in an attempt to express the gravity of the experience being described. This is not to make any of you, our valued listeners, uncomfortable. In fact, the hope is to help communicate the far-reaching negative impact of using the N-word to describe someone. So then, we hope you'll appreciate the stories of these brave young adult family members. Thank you for tuning in.
Welcome to this week's Black Awareness Association of Juno's discussion. I'm Christina Michelle Patterson, your host for this segment and moderator for our group conversation. Today, we're going to hear from a few millennials who grew up in Juno. We're going to share, listen, and hopefully learn from each other's experiences on our topic for today, which is growing up Black in Juno. We're on Zoom and we'll be popping in and out as schedules permit, so I'll introduce new participants as they come in. Here with us now, we have Janelle Billingsley. Janelle, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me and for asking me to participate in this conversation.
Absolutely. I am so excited that you are here today. Aww. Can you tell us a little bit about
yourself? It's always good to hear from home.
So, Janelle, you call Juno home and you live on the East Coast now, right?
Yes.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about your life there and what you're doing and all the exciting things that are happening for you?
Sure. Well, I will be honest. It's not that exciting right now. There's a lot going on, but COVID has, you know, really shut this area down. But in general, I am a acquisition and technology development professional, and I've had a long history, a long career with the Department of Defense, and I recently moved to the civilian side of and the federal side of service. So that's what I'm doing right now. That's really what life is consisting of, trying to find and develop and implement innovative solutions to combat this this illness. So that's what's going on in my world right now.
Wow, that is so awesome. It might sound very common and kind of like ho-hum every day to you, but that sounds really exciting to me.
Thank you.
So can you tell me a little bit about what brought your family to Juno?
Sure.
Yeah. And for those who are listening, I actually know Janelle very well. We grew up together.
yeah. 9333 Northland Street is where I grew up. And Christina used to come over. Yes. And I used to go over to her house.
Absolutely. But it's been so long. I don't think I even remember. Like, so how did you guys come to live here in Juno, Alaska?
Sure. So my father and ultimately my family is originally from the DC metro area. And I'm going to give a little bit of information history as it relates to like Black America, just because it actually shapes like my experience in Juno. But the DC metro area is the second highest for the number of Blacks with Black degree holders, and the median household income or Black household income is about 70 to 75,000. And home ownership rates are about 50%. And the DC metropolitan area in particular has one of the largest Black middle class and Black white collar professionals, to include doctors and lawyers. My father and mother, you know, they lived through the civil rights movement. Obviously it was really big in this area. And they intended what's called, and I'm not sure how many people in Juno are familiar with this term, but HBCUs. My dad played football, and he was a lifelong Washingtonian. And I think he might have wanted to play for the Washington Redskins at one point in time, but got injured. And so he went on to become an accountant and invested very heavily in real estate in Capitol Hill area of Washington, D.C., and had a number of jobs with the federal government. He worked for the Department of Housing and Urban Development, the Department of Treasury, And he was looking for adventure. He was an interesting city kid who loved the great outdoors. And so he took a position with the Coast Guard. And at that time, in the late 70s, early 80s, the Coast Guard had overseas assignments available in Germany and Alaska. And as I mentioned, he grew up in the great outdoors, and the opportunity to go to Alaska, he could not turn down. So I arrived in Juneau at a very early age, and, you know, really, I feel like started to become more integrated into the community when I started kindergarten at Capital School. So that's how we got to Juneau.
And Janelle, can you just clarify what HBCU stands for those who are not familiar?
Absolutely. So historically Black colleges and universities, that's definitely, like, for those of you who want to know more about Black culture and Black community, it's something that you should probably look up. As many of you guys might be aware of, African-Americans were not allowed to attend white institutions. And even today, you tend to see a lot of Black professionals who actually come out of HBCUs today. So some of the popular ones in the Washington, D.C. area include, like, Bowie State, Morgan State University, Howard University, which is one of the top HBCUs. And so, you know, just to kind of give you a context, like, my parents really valued education and they believed in education. It was very much a part of, woven into the fabric of this community, the community that they were raised in. And it was something that was very, very important to them.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome.
I want to talk a little bit about what it was like going to school here in Juneau. And before we do, I'll just share a little bit about my self and the history of our family as well.
Love it. Yay.
I was actually born in Anchorage, raised in Juneau. We moved here somewhere around maybe age 6 or 7. For mm-hmm. myself, and then my brother was a couple years younger than I was, and military kind of brought our family here. My father was actually born here in Alaska, and his mm-hmm. parents came through the military, and they were stationed outside of Anchorage. And my mother is from Louisiana, and her brother actually mm-hmm. was in the military, and he was stationed somewhere outside of Anchorage. Uh-huh. And when my mom turned 18, the summer that she graduated high school, she actually came to Alaska to visit her brother who was in the Army.
Aww.
And she met my dad during that summer, and that was it. They fell in love, and it's kind of, you know, the rest was history. So,
what a great story.
Yeah. So I've got my dad's side, you know, is from here, and my mom's side's from the South. And then there's me and my brother now, who really don't know anything other than Juneau when it comes to our experience growing up.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's how our family came to be here in Alaska. Yeah. So let's talk about some fond memories growing up here in Juneau as an African American, as someone who looks different from almost everybody else. What were some
right?
of the good
yeah,
times?
Yeah, there was like a good 6 of us, right? Just
right.
kidding. I have so many good memories of Juneau, and I, like I said, to this day, I still consider it to be home. I think one of the things that I just miss, like living in a much bigger, broader metropolitan area is, and one thing that I feel like Juneau prides itself on is its sense of community. And, you know, I really feel like we were really tight knit for the most part. And I mean, we did everything together, right? Like, you know, the same kids that you went to school with or the same kids that you're in activities with. So we really know each other and like love each other like extended family. And so I love it when I do make my way back home, I always run into people as soon as I get to SeaTac airport. Even though I haven't lived in Juneau for like 20 years, like people still, you know, remember and, you know, talk to me. And even to this day, like I get IMs, you know, on Facebook from people from the community that are just reaching out just to see if I'm okay, to see how I'm doing, because they actually care. So I think that's one of
awesome.
The biggest things that I love about Juneau is that sense of community. There's a lot more I could say about that. I also loved, I was thinking about this earlier today. I loved, I loved how there was like certain segments of the population that really embraced what I consider to be like popularized Black culture in the 90s. I feel like there were so many shows and so many music videos, and you know, there, I just felt like so many people identified with Black culture, and you know, through music and through song and through movies. I remember when Sister Act came out, and one of my friends were like, is that what choirs are like at Black churches? I want to become a Christian and go to church just so that I can hear the music. And so I just, you know, there's so many great things about Juno that I love.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And I agree with you. Having gone to California right out of high school here, and lived there, I lived there for 12 years and recently returned to Juneau, I can definitely say the sense of community here is something that is not experienced everywhere. And so, yeah, that's something that I do hold near and dear to my heart about growing up here in Juneau. It's like, it feels like one big family, and you don't, everybody knows everybody kind of, but even if they don't, it's still, you know, people look out for each other. And
right.
Yeah, and so that was instilled in me, and you know, and I took that with me when I left, and I learned some hard lessons early.
Yeah, the rest of the world isn't quite like that.
Exactly. And people would be like, where are you from? I'm like, Alaska. They're like, oh, yeah, we get it. We get it. But I mean, just as such a compliment to Juno, I've had several people visit me as an adult since I've been back here in the past 3-4 years. And every time someone comes, most of them come from either New York or from LA. And when they come, they're like, we get it. We get it. Like, we understand
you
so much better.
We understand you and why you're like that.
Exactly. Like, why you're so kind and so friendly and, you know, so just, you know, relaxed. And that's one of the biggest things that they say is, like, there's no litter. Like, it's so clean and fresh here, you know, and everybody is nice. Like, people say hi to you. People smile at you in the stores. Like, the customer service in the stores, like, people actually start a conversation with you and, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's a really big thing that we can take for granted, but yeah, I certainly appreciate it. So let's talk about some of the experiences growing up here that maybe weren't so great in regards to being of color. Janelle, did you experience any racial issues in your childhood here?
So the short answer is yes. I would say that I experienced racism for much of my life in various forms in Juneau. You know, at certain moments of my life, it was overt, while in other situations, it was very covert. And, you know, some of it was just from sheer ignorance, you know, like children repeating things that they heard about people of color. But in other instances, it was very malicious and mean, and perpetuated by adults. So yes, the answer is yes.
Wow. Can you say more about the adults?
Sure. I'll give you an example. I'll give you an example of the first, what I consider to be, you know, other people may not see it the same way, but what I consider to be my first experience with overt racism. And I was 6 years old. And one part of my family background that I didn't mention is that my family is very religious. They're Christian. My dad is a former preacher. And they enrolled me in a private school to ensure that I got a premium education that aligned with my Christian values. And, you know, as I said earlier, I gave you the backstory about how my family's from the DC metro area, and that education was very important to them. And, you know, because they saw me as a future professional. So the other thing is that my family, and this is really important because people are going to be like, well, why was her mom there? Why was she able to be there? I had the luxury of having my mom at home for much of my formative years. And so she was free to make frequent visits to school to observe what was going on. And, you know, we can talk more about that later. But again, my dad had invested heavily in real estate and had all this other stuff going. He did a lot of the accounts and did local bookkeeping for some of the local businesses in Juneau. But when a number of times when my mom came to visit me at school, she noticed that I was habitually placed in the back of the classroom. While other kids were moved around, you know, rotated from the middle seats in the front, I was always in the back. Which is a real hot button for, you know, some of you guys that don't know the history of, you know, Black people sitting in the back, having to be in the back. It was a problem for my mom, and she raised the issue and kept raising the issue until I was moved. I remember finishing both the first grade reading curriculum and also the math curriculum. I finished very early. And rather than being celebrated and rewarded, I was punished for that.
Wow.
And categorized as a nuisance. And at this particular institution, there were multiple grades in one classroom, and I could have just as easily, you know, started working on the next grade. And, you know, basically her solution was to have me sit in the back of the classroom and do nothing. And my mom, again, you came up to the school frequently, saw this, asked questions, and challenged it. And my teacher's solution was that I was going to help the other students. So I was helping other students with their work instead of what I was actually supposed to be in school for, which was to get an education. So the following year, my parents removed me from school and homeschooled me for second grade. And again, you know, socioeconomics definitely plays into this, but they had the luxury to be able to do that.
Wow. Oh my goodness. I don't think that I ever heard that story. I did not know that you experienced that. Oh my goodness. How did that make you feel at the time? I mean, having been like an overachiever and working so hard, and I mean, you're so intelligent anyway, it probably was easy for you to just kind of zoom through things, but you know, instead of getting the accolades that you deserved for that, you know, you were almost kind of like penalized. How did that make you feel?
At first, like certain things, I didn't really know what was happening. You know, you know, when you're six, you don't really know how to process it. You know that you're being treated differently. You know that you did something different than other people. And so I guess it's hard for you to figure out how to process it and how to digest it. And I think one of the best things that I had is I really had parents, or at least my mom was very, very involved, very, very hands-on. And so, you know, some things that would like make a child cry, and feel really bad, she was able to help me work through and, you know, call it for what it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, really did things to, and, you know, we can talk more about this later, but they really did a good job of broadening my aperture and what I saw was possible for me, and interpreting like bad behavior as just that bad behavior, and then giving me really good examples, having me read books, submerging myself in positive Black imagery, positive Black literature, and, you know, people who are very successful despite what somebody, how someone was treating me, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I am so thankful that you had a mother, and well, both parents, but especially that your mom, you know, who was there to guide you through that and knew how to get involved and knew how to help. You know, help you process, you know, because you're right, at 6 years old, it makes a lot of sense that you wouldn't necessarily know what's going on or know how to feel about it. But to have mom there to lead you, that's a big blessing for sure.
Yes, it was.
Yeah,
it really was.
Mom. Yeah. Thank you so much, Janelle. Let's see here. Okay, we have Ernest here. Ernest Montz, welcome to the conversation. So glad to have you today.
Thank you.
And Ernest, can you just share a little bit about your history here in Juneau? Like, how long did you live here? What brought your family here? Just and actually, if you can share just where you are right now and what you're doing, just kind of tell us a little bit about yourself.
Right now I live in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I'm a manager at a Italian restaurant up here.
Awesome.
And in Juneau, I moved there my freshman year of high school. And that was back in 99, 1999. And what brought us there was my dad had got a job at Bartlett Regional Hospital. And we were living in Guam at the time. And they offered to pay for our whole relocation. So that was something that my dad really couldn't pass up because he was trying to get off the island of Guam. And it's very expensive. So if they're willing to pay for our whole family's relocation, then that was something he couldn't pass up. And when I got there my freshman year, I was miserable, honestly, at first, because I was leaving a tropical island to move to Juneau. And it was raining. It felt like 24/7. There was nothing but Caucasians. And it was miserable. For the most part, though, when I got there, they were nice. 98% of them were just super nice. And I started quickly, getting acclimated with the people and making friends quickly. And the weather, that took a while longer to get used to.
I can
But
imagine.
making friends. And I would say the first time I encountered racism was maybe about a month in, actually. And I was taking the bus home. And like, I'm not going to say his name, but like, I was talking to one of the girls on the bus, and I heard one of her friends say to her, "Sorry about the language, but he's like, does this nigger live by me?" Like, he was trying to whisper, but I heard him clear as day.
Wow. And this was on the school
He
bus?
was just,
Was
this was on the bus.
okay.
And I didn't say nothing, but I heard her say, "Stop." She was just trying to whisper back. She's like, "Stop, stop, stop." And she's like, "No, really, does this nigger live by me?" And I'm like, "Really? Like, does this guy think I can't hear him? Like, he's doing a very weak attempt at whispering." And I just left it alone, never confronted him. And it was kind of obvious that he didn't really try to hide his racism. He had like a Confederate flag taped to his trapper keeper and all this stuff. And I experienced it from here and there. And like, it wasn't as bad for me probably as it was for most people over the years, because like I was an athlete and I was pretty good at the sports, and I knew stories of people that I played football with who were always cool to me to my face. But then at the same time, like I knew like for a fact that they would turn around and call friends that I knew niggers, and like not and like friendly as white people say, like I didn't mean it like that. No, they were actually meaning it like this nigger doesn't belong here type stuff. And they never did that to me when I was on the team with them, or they were never rude to me when I was on the team with them. But like just hearing that after the fact, like when I wasn't playing with them anymore, that they thought of people that were actually my friends, that they thought of them like that, it like put me through a whole different perspective. And
Yeah.
it wasn't cool. But yeah.
Ernest, can I ask a question really quick?
Absolutely.
First of all, thank you for being willing to share this. My heart hurts just listening. That's a horrible thing to experience freshly here to a new environment, and on your school bus, someone uses that word to describe you and wants to know if they live close to you. Like, that's I can't imagine that. And like you said, having friends or people who you thought were your friends, you guys are playing on the same team, and to think or find out that they think of you in a way that you didn't know they did, it has to be hurtful. How did it shape your outlook on the world or even on yourself?
Well, at first I was like, maybe this was why I was uncomfortable being around all these white people in the first place. In Guam, it was just mostly the local people I was around.
Okay.
And like my parents, like they grew up in the States, and they kind of warned me that's like the few white people that were in Guam don't really often like Guam because they get treated like how they treat other people in the States, basically. And so when I got to the States And when I witnessed that, I'm like, oh, so that's what they're talking about. Okay, I got you. And it wasn't right in Guam how they got treated, and it wasn't right how I started getting treated there. And like I said, it got better for me over the years, but like it would still pop up as ugly head here and there. And it sucked, but I eventually came to know that that's just like the way of the world.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be. But like, you know, it's just how you have to handle yourself in certain situations. And I did a pretty good job doing it for the most part.
Let me ask you this, because I know that your time is limited and I appreciate you so much for taking the time to do this with us. What would you say to encourage the children of color here who are experiencing racism now?
At this time, I know it's difficult, but like what helped me a lot was athletics and just finding the right support system, like outside of your family, you know?
Yes.
Like getting, like obviously your family will help a lot, but like I was saying, sports helped me a lot. Like once I started making friends, make the right friends and just stick to them, like a diverse group of friends, which I also had. And you don't have to tell them everything, like when you face racism or whatever, because they're not going to understand. Like through all the stuff that's been going on over the last couple of months, I've had friends that I consider some of my best friends to this day call me out of the blue and is like, I'm sorry I had my head in the sand this whole time. And now I'm finally starting to understand. And like, nice. They're not all always going to understand. But when they do, it's a great feeling. Helps you out. Like, just don't expect them to understand. But have that support system, basically. Like, when you just need someone to talk to and hang out with and let yourself know that not all of them are bad, you know?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ernest. And that makes a lot of sense. I love what you said about diversity. Of course, you know, we mm-hmm. should have the automatic support of our family, and I think most of us do, but having a diverse group, a network is really important as well. And so, yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. Is there anything else that you would like to add before we end?
Well, basically just know that it's not all bad, and yeah, you're gonna run into some rough waters, but we're strong people and we'll be all right.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again, Ernest. It was a pleasure to talk to you, and I appreciate it, and have a great rest of your Sunday.
All right, Christina. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.